You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby, where you can engage with us via our website at cjsf.ca or on our social media, which is CJSF Radio on TikTok and Blue Sky, or CJSF Music and CJSF Talk on Instagram.
Talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Hello, 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 and good morning, and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF. You're listening to Campus and Community Radio, broadcasting from Burnaby on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem Nations. I'm your host, Nicole, and I hope you are doing well this morning. Depending on where you are in the Lower Mainland, there might have been a little bit of sprinkle of rain, but it seems to have held off so far, so I hope the morning is dry for you. I have definitely been busy over the past few days chatting with some really interesting people. So I'm happy to say that I have a bunch of interviews to share with you today. I am actually going to kickstart the show with an interview that I wanted to play last week, and it was one that I did recently with Paisley Hoganrad from Indigenous Tourism BC. So let us take a listen to that conversation. This is Nicole Hines with CJSF 90.1 FM, and I want to let you guys know that I'm really looking forward to my chat with my guest today. Basically, as we all know, the weather is getting warmer, and what that means for me personally is I start to think about places that I want to visit for vacation, and also I'm really big on staycations, so I do like to look about like what's going on in BC. And so I'm super, super excited to chat with my guest today, because I think there is going to be a really great conversation about some interesting things that we can do, especially if we didn't already know. So I have with me Paisley Hoganrad. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Welcome to CJSF, Paisley. How are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Now, Paisley, I'm wondering if you could just introduce yourself before we kind of get into some questions that I have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you. So my name is Paisley. I am Liquido, a member of the Weebacum First Nation on Vancouver Island, which is known as Campbell River. I also have mixed European ancestry. I was born and raised in White Rock, BC, and I currently reside in Vancouver on the traditional territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Peoples. And I work as the Travel Media and Stakeholder Engagement Coordinator at Indigenous Tourism BC.
Welcome. Thank you so much again for joining me. I am curious, could you talk a little bit about Indigenous Tourism BC, especially, you know, for listeners who may not have stumbled on your organization as of yet. So please give us a bit of, you know, walk us through, if
yeah,
you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So Indigenous Tourism BC, which I'll also call ITBC, it's a nonprofit stakeholder-based organization. So we work in really close partnership with Destination British Columbia. And our role is really to help grow a sustainable and culturally rich Indigenous tourism industry. So we provide resources, training, networking opportunities, experience development, and marketing for Indigenous tourism individuals or communities who are already in the tourism industry or looking to start a tourism business.
Okay. Okay. So as a person who is not in the space, would I be able to go to the website and kind of like get ideas?
Oh, yes.
Hey.
Yes. Our website, indigenousbc.com, we have all of our listings of the businesses that are members with us on there, the visitor-ready businesses. There's about 300 different ones. And
Wow.
you can navigate around the website by accommodation, by type of experience, however the search works best for you. And we also have some wonderful stories, kind of written out as blogs that describe different parts of the province and what kind of experiences you can expect.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Now, I am, curiosity all throughout this conversation. It has there been an experience that you've been on recently that you'd like to share, to kind of give us an idea as of something that, we can experience as a listener?
Absolutely. So I actually had an incredible opportunity recently to visit Haida Gwaii,
Nice.
and I visited many amazing Indigenous tourism businesses there, like the Haida Heritage Center and Haida Gwaii Museum. One of my favorite parts of the trip was getting to go on a Haida style expedition.
Ooh.
So yes, this is a Haida owned business. It's a Haida family owned. And it's actually the only Haida tour company that takes you into Gwaihannas National Park. So it's a really incredible opportunity, and to go with Haida guides who have the cultural storytelling and the family connections. It really enhances the experience, and it's really, really special. You visit Haida village sites and just learn directly from them, which is just an opportunity you wouldn't get with any other tour operator. We're out on the water. We didn't see any whales, but sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. We saw some seals, birds, it was just a lovely, incredible experience. And there are different tour operators that take you out, for cultural storytelling, whale watching, bear viewing, all over BC, really.
I love to hear that. And I, again, curious, just hearing about this incredible experience, are there like a lot of experiences to choose from? Would you say? I know this pretty much covers the entire province, right? But I feel like if you're not connecting to the community, I'm wondering if people are not even aware. So I already know the answer, but I'm just asking, is there a lot to choose from?
Yes, absolutely. And the word tourism is so broad.
Yes.
There is anything from an Indigenous-owned gift shop to a
Right.
cafe to a museum, something bigger like a wilderness lodge, a
Right.
hotel. It really expands the whole breadth of anything you could look for.
Right. I love the fact too that you even included hotel, because I think that is, I know that I've seen it. I mean, I've lived in Alberta as well, so like I've had the opportunity to see some really incredible hotels also. But I love that you brought that up too, to be that you could even have a hybrid experience as well. Like, let's say you're going somewhere to do something else, but you can also incorporate by staying in an Indigenous-owned hotel as well. So I love that. Are there some other examples of activities that maybe we didn't touch on that you want?
Probably.
I feel like just to give, a plethora of ideas for, because I know that there's things like, storm watching, for example. You know what I mean? Are there some other?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different like cultural walking tours. There's one
Nice.
actually right here in Vancouver called Talese Tours.
Nice.
So it's kind of just allows you the Indigenous perspective kind of in your own backyard.
Yes.
I got to experience that, and it's through the lens of the Seashell and Squamish First Nation, and It really opens up your eyes to what's right in front of you, like what could be a plant medicine. And yeah, it's helps you experience the land differently and in a cultural way. And yeah, that's something that was a great experience for me.
Love to hear that. And you did mention the website. So if you wouldn't mind plugging it again.
Yeah, so indigenousbc.com.
com. And what are like what's a some tips of like navigating the website? Because I know there's a lot going on, right? And if I'm like new and I am looking for some opportunities, is things are broken down by like accommodations and stuff like that. Like how, give us a little walkthrough.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, if you're looking for something specific, sector of tourism like dining or wellness, you can go to the things to do and navigate that
Love.
section.
Love.
Another really useful tool actually is our map. So you can click on the map there, and then it shows you the whole province and kind of the map pins around the province. And so you can navigate by area and see what kinds of businesses are in that area. And then our inspiration tab is where you get to read more long form stories and itineraries with suggestions on where to travel and what kind of experiences you can do. I know you talked about storm watching, and we have a great blog on there that suggests some different places around BC you could go.
Nice.
Experience Indigenous businesses and do some storm watching.
So I just want to say that I love that you have that like option of reading stories as well, because I find that, when you go to a lot of websites that allow you to navigate and search for things like dining and accommodations and stuff like that, there isn't always that storytelling component. And I feel like that I from what I know is definitely part of Indigenous culture, which is storytelling. So I love the fact that that's also included. And especially if you haven't done something before, I think it would, give you a bit of an idea as to whether that might be your thing or not. So I do love that that is definitely an option. My next question is about at least in your in your words, right? What would you say sort of like the vision of the organization would be? Like
Yeah,
where are they?
I think the vision really is to support and uplift Indigenous tourism businesses. And more and more people who come to British Columbia are looking for these culturally rich and sustainable experiences. And that is Indigenous tourism. And so we want to just support them as much as we can and help show travelers that if you're looking for an experience that is grounded, that is sustainable, you should be in supporting an Indigenous-owned business. And
Absolutely.
you can really learn a lot about the cultures here in BC. It's so diverse through these experiences, and I think it really means well-being for all.
Absolutely. I love that. And is there, in addition to what you do, being able to be this almost like a hub of being able to find out all the things in the tourism space, for Indigenous operators and tourism operators or destination spaces, was there a platform before to kind of like house everything or get everybody connected?
Before Indigenous Tourism BC. I mean, not that I know of for BC. I mean, I think the organization is around 27 years old now. So we've been here for a minute and are continuing to grow and expand. So it's really beautiful to see.
Yes, I love it. I am, as people know, anytime I'm chatting with folks, I will always put links in show notes. I know that we mentioned the website, but are there other ways to connect to Indigenous Tourism BC?
Yes, we do have Instagram, YouTube, TikTok as well, and the handle is always Indigenous BC.
Nice.
And then we do have our app, which you can download on any app store.
Oh.
Yes, which is great for when you're traveling within the province. All of our suggestions and businesses are on there, and the map will actually show you where you are and what experiences are close to you. So that can be a really helpful tool.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I will include that information in show notes because it'll just be easy. I know sometimes you're listening and you're out in the streets and you're not able to write things down. So I'll ensure that I put that in the notes. Before we kind of wind down, is there anything that we might not have touched on that you think you might want to share for listeners?
So a marketing initiative that I lead is called the Authentic Indigenous Program. And there's two designation streams. One is called Indigenous Owned, and one is called Authentic Indigenous. And so the Indigenous Owned designation, it's a green circle that says Indigenous Owned around the outside, and it's awarded to all of our visitor-ready member businesses.
Okay.
So that's really something that you can look for when you're out in the world in BC looking to support an Indigenous-owned business. You can look for that mark, look for that sticker. It's on websites, it's in storefronts. And just to help you know and be self-assured that you're supporting Indigenous communities and economic sovereignty through supporting those businesses. And then there's also Authentic Indigenous, which has a similar logo, but it is orange.
Okay.
And this designation identifies a strong cultural tourism experience. So it's those businesses that are really leaning into sharing their culture with travelers and operating sustainably and giving back to their community. So it's really those three pillars. And so you can look at all of our Authentic Indigenous designated businesses on the Authentic Indigenous tab on our website and read about their stories and why they have received the designation. And so if you're looking for a cultural experience, that's a great place to look.
Absolutely. And especially I feel like people are being more intentional with the way that they're spending their dollars, whether it is for a staycation or an overnight or a weekend or a week kind of experience. And the fact that it's easy identifiable, right, based on a symbol, it makes it a lot easier for people to kind of like, you know, do the work that they want to do, which is support, you know, as opposed to making it hard to kind of like search through a needle in a haystack, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Really trying to give that visibility to the business owners, the communities, and then the ease to the travelers.
Absolutely. And lastly, before I let you go, have you received any feedback from business owners or tour operators or destinations based on, you know, the fact that the organization exists? I know it's been around for a long time, but, you know, I'm sure you onboard a lot of new businesses throughout, right? So have you gotten any feedback?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, all the businesses I got to interact with are all so lovely and happy to be a part of our network because it connects them to us, but it also connects them with other Indigenous operators and really just strengthens that community as a whole. We actually just put together a YouTube video about the Authentic Indigenous and Indigenous owned designations, and it's all stakeholders. It's all business owners. I think they're actually all female business owners.
Okay.
It's wonderful. And it just worked out that way. And they're all talking about what the designations mean to them. So that feedback really, really meant a lot to me. And if anyone wants to check out that video, it's on our channel on YouTube.
I have to say, I do love that you guys are on YouTube because I'm a visual learner and I think that it builds connection. I get connected more when I get to sort of see the story kind of unfold visually. I love the printed word, do not get it wrong, but I think that there's something about, I know not every organization has a YouTube channel, so I think that this is a great way to give an inside look and to be the people behind the experiences, the people behind the businesses, right? And so that you can kind of build that connection before you get there.
Yeah, totally, 100%.
Love it. Well, again, thank you so much, Paisley, for joining me. I hope that this inspires listeners to visit the website, visit the YouTube channel. I am going to include all the other ways to connect as well. And I'm hoping that folks come out and, you know, enjoy BC.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that was my conversation with Paisley Hoganrad with Indigenous Tourism BC. As I mentioned in our conversation, I will include the link to the website, which is indigenousbc.com, as well as some of the other ways that you can connect with them from YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, all the things. Now, I am going to be sharing another interview, but before I do that, I'm actually going to play a song. The song is going to give you a house and electronic vibe because the next interview is going to be delving into ballroom culture. So let's take a listen to a track called Heartache Plus You. Thank you.
a fan of industrial and have been trying to find smaller artists? Have you only heard of Nine Inch Nails and are looking to get further into the genre? Maybe you're like that guy I met in my lecture who hadn't even heard of Linkin Park. No matter where you're coming from, Wire & Nerve is the show for you. 1 hour of all kinds of industrial, from Throbbing Gristle to Godflesh to Frontline Assembly and more. Tune in Monday 7 to 8 p.m. only on CJSF 90.1 FM Burn.
Hello, 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 and I am back. I hope that you enjoyed that last track, Heartache Plus You by Bad Colors. It had me moving, shaking and grooving, feeling like sunshine is, you know, just here blaring. Now let's get into the next interview that I will be sharing. I had a great conversation with Ralph Escamillan, artistic director of Fake Knot, and Ralph is also the choreographer and performer in the world premiere of My House, which is a performance celebrating ballroom culture, familial bond, love, and support. My House debuts on June 19th and 20th at the Dance Center. So let's take a listen to our chat.
This is Nicole Hines with CJSF 90.1 FM, and I'm here with Fake Knot artistic director, choreographer, and performer Ralph Escamillan to chat about the world premiere of My House, which is a performance celebrating ballroom culture, familiar bond, and love and support. So, Ralph, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I am so good. The sun is shining in these Lower Mainland streets, mm-hmm. so I'm very happy to see it.
People are out today.
They are out today. They were out yesterday, too, so I'm here for it. Okay, so my first question to you, I really, really want to get into talking about My House.
Yeah, so My House is a new project under my company, Fake Knot. I'm a dance company based in the city, really focused on costume, textile, and the body in the last few years. And I'm also a founder of the pioneer of the Vancouver ballroom kiki scene.
Okay.
So there was a big interest of bringing my two worlds together. Actually, my first dance piece I ever created was called Hinky Punk in 2018 and kind of addressed my very early entrance into ballroom, the idea of competing, being in a battle, being in a ball, and the kind of the stress of that. and then, so this work, almost 10 years, I mean, I guess 8 years since that.
Wow.
I've come back to ballroom now with all this knowledge I've had of building the scene here, having a Kiki house, founding a Kiki house, also being a mother of a Canadian mainstream house of Basquiat, Kiki house and House of Basalia. While also helping lead and support the new leaders of the community. It was really important for me to want to share to a new audience these kind of familial bonds that ballroom is really known for, but I think it's kind of like the unspoken hero of the culture. So much of what people see about ballroom and voguing is like the glitz and the glam and what you see on the floor, on the runway, on the clip, on your socials, but so much of what gets us there is the family structure, the mother, father, the parental figures, your prince, princess, your godparents, all these kind of like home mechanisms that help bring these moments forward at a ball.
Okay, so I know a little bit about ballroom culture, but for somebody who doesn't know anything, how would you describe it? Because you did mention like the familial bond and sort of, you know, the mom, the dad, like there is that structure of the house. Mm-hmm, how would you describe ballroom culture to someone who is hearing it for the first time?
So ballroom is a culture that comes from the Black, Latinx, trans, and queer communities of Harlem, founding in the 60s. So historically, there's a tangent of it, of course, from the drag community. Crystal LaBeija famously was outraged by not winning in the documentary The Queen. So if you know, you know. Look at her makeup. It's terrible. And she started her own black and brown drag balls, which were really like queer, like drag pageants. So the format of ballroom today kind of continues that legacy of the pageant structure, but unlike Miss Universe, whatever, where everyone does the same category, in ballroom, all the categories are dispersed as individual events in itself. And then I think kind of really allows for different types of queerness to be celebrated. So it's not just about looking like wearing the evening gown, the swimsuit gown, da da da. Maybe like for me in the ballroom scene, I walk Butch Queen Vogue Femme, which is like the dancing category. Mm-hmm. Butch Queen is the alias for a gay cis man, mm-hmm. and Vogue Femme is a style of voguing. And I also walk Small Boys European Runway, which is very much like Versace, Naomi Campbell walking runway.
Okay.
And that perpetuates now until this day. And yeah, you see it on TV, you see it on everywhere now.
Love, love, love it. Now, My House debuts at the Dance Center on June 19th and 20th for 8 p.m. shows both nights. And I'm curious, what are you most excited about when you think about My House?
Honestly, I'm just excited to bring amazing talent of the ballroom scene from around the country into a room. We have an icon, Snoopy, now the mother of the House of FUBU. She just debuted her FUBU house in Toronto, shout out. So she'll be in town from Toronto. Father Jaws Siriano, who's also from Toronto, and legendary Besos 007 from Montreal will be the dancers in this work. Princess Peggy, Pink Lady, is on the mic. And my own daughter, Simone Vesalio, will also be DJing throughout the work. And I guess what I'm most curious about and excited around all of that is bringing ballroom audiences into the room, mixing them with the traditional or maybe the custom dance center audience, you know, which maybe doesn't know anything about ballroom, mm-hmm. But hoping that the work can bridge, you know, these two communities together. And because a lot of work that I'm curious about and what I do and everything is really about bridging and connecting. And as I think it's the only way we can understand and get to know each other and care about each other more.
Absolutely. And I'm really excited. I plan on attending. I am super, super excited. I feel like your answer kind of segues into the next question that I have, which probably has a similar answer, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Why do you feel that my house is so important for us as the general, you know what I mean, Lower Mainland folks, right? Why should we come out and see My House?
I think so often we forget how connection and being in space together is truly powerful and like life-changing. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that by people seeing this work, they are reminded of that and also question their ideas of family and whether it be biological or chosen, and how important they are in how they can transform our lives, and how to nurture those relationships and that, yeah, you have to come at it with care, that there's nuance and that without those support systems, like or maybe not that without them, but that we are never really on our own,
right.
That there are always people around us that want and see it for us and want to push us and want to care and love us.
Love, love, love that. Now, we can get tickets by, I guess, visiting the Dance Center's website.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to make sure that I include that website in the show notes.
And there's also an exhibit happening downstairs at the foyer of the Dance Center until Vancouver Pride that parallels the show. So there are archived objects, costumes, and a documentary, actually, by Simone Missalia, too. Showcasing the ballroom scene. So
awesome.
Yeah, because similar to a family, you have like, you know, your hand-me-downs, you know,
yeah.
A dress goes here, it goes here. And so one of the parts of the wall is a didactic showing some of the history of some of the garments. And also we have an adjacent talk series, kind of like not as developed podcast,
yeah.
Kind of sharing the history, the different familial structures. So we had a talk with legendary Twisted and Tamar Miyake Mugler. They're the mother-father of the House of Miyake Mugler, but the mother and father role. Mm-hmm. We just had a talk recently in April with the prince and princesses of the scene. And later this June, we have a talk with the godparents of the Canadian ballroom scene.
I love it. Now, before I let you go, you are the founder of Fake Knot. Would you like to just give us a little insight
you know, peek as to your company?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So FakeKnot has been kind of an accumulation of all my training and my experience as a dancer, more formally founding it in 2018 after my first work. I come from many, many different dance backgrounds. So I started in breakdancing, got into contemporary dance and all the other street dance styles. Okay. Also do film and TV and all this stuff, and now learn flamenco.
Oh.
So FakeKnot has become really my way of funneling my curiosities and my multiple selves through this kind of alias. And more recently in the last few years, and I guess always, I love clothing, I love textile. I've been really anchored around like the visual aesthetic of how costume can create choreographic narrative, whether that be through an anthropologic route or a really tactile route, like my paper dress piece called Croaky. Yeah, and or just like fashion, like Janet Jackson costume, you know, so
yes,
quite
yes.
a range. Yeah, that's kind of my world. And it's been really interesting seeing it shift as I shift, as many artists do, and but also become more finite as I keep moving forward.
Yes. And how can we all get connected with you or FakeKnot just to see maybe some of the other projects that you might have in future?
Yeah, so all my Instagrams are pretty open. So if you go to Ralph Escamillan on my Instagram page, those are hyperlinked in my bio with all my different multiple selves. You can learn more about FakeKnot at FakeKnot.com. We have a website with all of our past works and new works coming up. Mm-hmm. And I'm always down to reply to an email or a DM. So don't ever be afraid to message or hit
connect.
Me
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. And before I let you go, is there anything that we have missed? Because, you know, we're still here. So just want to make sure.
Yeah, I guess I would shout out a ball is only a ball because of its community. And the show that you're watching with My House is really going to be my viewpoint of ballroom. But if you want to see a ball in the Vancouver scene in July, which is our Vancouver Ballroom Weekend, annual Ballroom Weekend, July 24th, we have the Vancouver Kiki Ballroom Alliance of the Year Awards, which is on the Friday. We have My Posh Ball, which is one of only three mainstream balls in Canada on the 25th. That's at the Pearl.
Okay.
And then we'll have a workshop series on the 26th here at the Dance Center as well. So that's a big weekend. So if you want to know about ballroom and watch it real for real with the money, with the cash, head out then.
Ralph, thank you so much for joining me. You have been a pleasure. I am really, really looking forward to coming out and seeing My House. So thank you. And
we'll see you in June.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And to everyone, My House debuts June 19th at the Dance Center as part of the Global Dance Connection series, which features exciting dance works by artists from across Canada. Thank you again, Ralph.
Thank you.
You know why you listen to this station. It plays new music, supports your community, and provides up-to-date news that you know you can trust. And unlike other stations, the people who work and volunteer here are a part of your community. Remember, though, they do this on a shoestring budget. The solution is the Community Radio Initiative. You can find out more details at mycri.ca. In just a few clicks, you can generate an email to send to the politicians who need to hear your message. mycri.ca.
Welcome back to Intravenous. You've been tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, broadcasting from the unceded Coast Salish territories. And that was my conversation with Ralph Escamillan, talking about My House. It is a world premiere happening at the Dance Center. I will ensure that I include the link to the Dance Center for tickets. And dates are Friday, June 19th and Saturday, June 20th for 8 p.m. shows both nights. Now, the last interview that I'm going to be sharing with you today is one that I did with Wiley Wei Jun-ho. She is the author and panelist at the upcoming Litter Asian Festival. So let us take a listen to our conversation. It was a lot of fun chatting with Wiley. I hope you enjoy. Nicole Hines with CJSF 90.1 FM, and I'm here with Wiley Wei Jun-ho, an author, mother, and community champion. Her short stories and essays have been published in Prism International, Rice Paper Magazine,
River Teeth, Room, and several anthologies. She is also a featured author at the 14th Annual Litter Asian Festival and will appear on the panel Between Tongues and Pages, New Asian Canadian Writing. This panel brings together writers whose early manuscripts were recognized by the Jim Wong Chu Emerging Writers Award. So, oh my goodness, Wiley, thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
Hi, Nicole. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm fine. I'm pretty excited these days because I'm in the middle of a book promo for my first book, for my baby debut.
Hey, okay, my gosh. Let's start with talking about your baby debut.
Okay.
Please. This is your first book titled The Astronaut Children of Dunbar Street, a memoir.
Yes. So it's a long time in the making. It is a memoir that it took me, I'm always a little embarrassed to say, but it took me 8 years to finish. Not full time, but from like start to publication. And I think that's because it's a story, I realize now looking back that it's actually a reclamation project. Oh. As in the astronaut children is it's a book about separated families. So parents working overseas while their kids grow up, raising themselves in places like Canada, the US, Australia, and so on. In my family's case, both my parents returned to Taiwan to work during the 1980s, very, very steep recession. I think it was the worst recession since the World War II. Mm. And my father, who was a physician, but with Taiwanese credentials, could not practice here. And after a few years, it was just too hard to make a living. And so both my parents decided to return to Taiwan to work, okay, leaving me at age 12 to grow up with my four older siblings in Vancouver. And we were told not to talk about it to outsiders, i.e. anyone outside the family, because people would judge us. They would, we might get in trouble. And so there was this like secrecy. And I think that secrecy became a source of shame. Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing took me a long time to write because growing up, I didn't really have language to describe the way we were growing up. The term astronaut family wasn't even coined until 1999. So there was just this feeling of, okay, mom and dad are overseas working really, really hard. And they tell us, you know, that they're making all these sacrifices for us. And the book really is born from this silence and this inability to articulate or reconcile, mm-hmm, parents who are willing to do anything for you, right, except stay with you. Right. And so growing up, it was this like constant tension inside of like, am I privileged? You know, am I really lucky? Or am I actually really deprived and abandoned? And so, yeah, that's all a long way to just explain that it took so long because I recognized through the writing of it that it really was a reclamation project. And I tried it as comedy. I tried it as fiction. I tried it as even a mystery story at one point, a travel story. And then finally it became the memoir it had to be because it's a reclamation project. And the only way you can reclaim something is to own it, right? And I think for me, that had to be nonfiction. But you spoke about the Jim Wong Chu Prize. And in 2020, I entered it because it's a prize for emerging writers, but in the fiction space. Mm-hmm. And back then it was a novel. And so I submitted my manuscript in late 2020 and it became a finalist for that year's prize. And even though it has significantly changed, being a finalist for the Jim Wong Chu Emerging Prize was so validating and so affirming. Right. And I think it really was the impetus for me to like keep going because there was something worthy there to tell.
Absolutely.
But it took another half a decade. But Anyway, I would, yeah, maybe I should just say that I'm really grateful to the prize, and I also feel like it's a great thing for young, not even young, but emerging writers to consider. Mm-hmm. That if you do have a manuscript close to finished, to consider entering. And I think the prize window is currently open until the end of September this year.
Oh, look at life. Look at
yeah.
that. Yes. Oh, I love that you just said that, because one of the questions like I like to ask creatives is, what has your relationship with this, I would say, more new craft, even though you've been doing it for a while? This is your debut novel, right? So
okay.
What has it been like getting connected to the written word, like being a writer? Like, how has that journey been for you?
Mm-hmm. I sometimes say, I joke that I wish I were like a musician or or a painter. I think writing is really difficult, Nicole. But unfortunately, I'm not, you know, gifted in any of the other arts, it seems. Because I feel like musicians have it really good. If they play something, it's practice, right? And then the notes just kind of vanish into the air.
Yeah.
Paintings, well, usually you make something interesting to look at. But I feel like words, like until it becomes a manuscript or a book or something, it just feels like, I don't know, a jumble of things that you save, and it just doesn't, it can be terrible. And there's like evidence of all of these failed attempts. So all to say that maybe if I had a different outlet, I would have tried, yeah. But I would say I am very grateful in all seriousness to the power of words. I think it is really a way for us to recognize ourselves and to grapple with our experiences. Mm-hmm. And because I am a nonfiction writer at this point, creative nonfiction, mm-hmm. Which is what memoirs really are, I think it has really afforded me a chance to reflect on my life and think about all the ways that I couldn't articulate what was happening when I was a kid, all the confusion and all that isolation. Right. And so I think being able to put it down into words and then revise and think about the different perspectives of my family members, especially my parents, whom I resented very much growing up. Mm-hmm. I thought, how could they abandon me? You know, like that was the central thought. But over the course of writing this book, I think it's really afforded me a chance to think what it must have, how difficult it must have been for them.
Make that decision, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's what writing affords us, is a chance to think more deeply and more into the different layers of reality, if you will.
Absolutely. And I have a question, like, what is, how has your family taken to this piece?
So my parents have passed, and I wonder, they were very traditional, and I think they'd be both proud and mortified by my writing about the family, right? Like, I think it's quite common that a lot of families don't want to air their dirty laundry.
Nice.
But I hope that this book, if I've done a good enough job, it's not about airing dirty laundry. It's actually about showing this little disgust phenomenon of the astronaut family. There are tens, if not hundreds of thousands of us around the world, and yet, like, separated families, and yet, like, very few nonfiction works. There are a few novels about it. There are graphic memoirs, but there is none that I know of as a memoir, and none around the Taiwanese experience.
Right.
And that very much is an ongoing, unfortunately, an ongoing concern, mm-hmm. where Taiwan is still a geopolitical flashpoint. And that was why my family came to Canada in the first place, to avoid a possible conflict with mainland China.
Right.
So I just feel like this book is not meant to, you know, expose
right.
dirty family secrets. It's more a way, actually, it's almost a tribute and a love letter to what we lived. And that even though it's not the most dramatic story, you know, we're fortunate enough to live in nice neighborhoods and have enough money. We didn't have to worry about tuition for school, for example, which is a huge privilege. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, what was the cost of that privilege? So that's what I wanted to explore.
I love that. And I feel like for those listening, I think you've given enough to entice someone to want to really like understand that dynamic, right? Through written word. So I appreciate that. Now I'm moving over to the Litter Asian Festival. It is in its 14th year. You are featured right author of the festival and will also be a panelist that I had mentioned called Between Tongues and Pages, New Asian Canadian Writing. How does that make you feel? I'm just, you know.
It's amazing. I've been volunteering for the festival for a long time. I've lost track of how many years. It's a wonderful festival. Awesome. And I'm just really, it feels a little surreal now to be on stage. But yeah, I love, it'll be a bit of a homecoming. It'll be fun. It'll be full of friends and people I really admire in the community. And yeah, with huge thanks to Alan Cho,
yes.
Todd Wong, Effie Powell, like all the stalwarts in the community who really uplift other Asian Canadian voices. And yeah, I'm just really happy to be back as a featured author.
I know. Can you imagine? And I just want to let listeners know that, I will include the link for this specific panel. It's going to be on June 27th from 4 to 5. It's going to be at the Chinese Cultural Center. Mm-hmm. And you will be also with sharing the stage with Jin Woo Park as
well.
That's
right.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that is awesome. So I'll make sure that I include the link so that it's easy for people to pick up tickets and things of that nature. So
yeah, I think it'll be a really, really crackling conversation because Jin Woo is and he actually, okay, here's some goss. So
oh,
he
love it.
Won.
Inside, bring it.
The year that I entered, he also entered, and he was the winner that year for Oxford Soju Club. And it's a great book, and I'm really glad it won. But I was like, I was the first runner up, so I have words for him. It'll be a really fun. It'll be very interesting because he is writing into the new sort of new Asian Ken Lit space as well. You know, how do we advance in the conversations and how do we move the narratives forward? And I just think it'll be really interesting. Yeah.
So for someone who's listening who is interested in embarking on a creative writing journey,
mm-hmm.
What advice would you offer?
I think everyone needs a community. Writing is a very solitary journey, and you like it's really ultimately up to you, your butt in the chair,
yeah.
and a, you know, pen and paper or a laptop. But beyond getting the words down, I think we need people to chat with, to bounce ideas off of, and then when you feel like quitting, for them to tell you not to.
Yeah.
I really believe in the power of community. I don't know that I would have published my book had I not been, because there's so many times I wanted to give up.
Right.
It's hard. I will not say that writing is easy, but it is very rewarding if you stick with it. And if you have a community, it's just exciting. Like you get to see what other people are doing that then, you know, might motivate and inspire you. And you in turn, you don't know, you could motivate other people.
Absolutely.
So I think it's really great to be in community. And I think in the Lower Mainland, at least, we're really lucky to have groups and writing communities, libraries start there that your local librarian will know.
Absolutely.
Different groups. Yeah.
Love
That's
that.
Advice.
And now what's next for you? I mean, I know that this is so new to you right now. Like, I mean, you book is out, and I know that there's a lot around that, but do you have any visions of like what's next?
Yes. Well, I would. So I'm in the middle of this like book promotion, and so by the way, the book is doing really, really well. It's enjoying its 11th week on the BC bestsellers list. Yeah.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. So I've been doing the circuit, I guess. I'm appearing in various public libraries, and I've started doing school drop-ins. Not drop-ins, I should say, like school visits.
Visits, yeah.
Class, like visiting usually senior grades. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are a lot of astronaut kids out there who are perhaps growing up confused and lonely as I did. I know that I did one just last week, actually, where I can always tell an astronaut kid in the crowd. Yeah. They're really attentive, yeah, but they're really like avoidant. they want to know, but they don't want to be singled out.
Yeah.
Because that was the way I was, right? And I think there is still this stigma, this confusion. And so I would love to reach them. Yeah. And maybe there'll be a follow-on book. I would love to have like an anthology of different voices from the community, because, and I would also love to reach out to their parents, because I think more than anything, the parents don't get a voice.
Yeah.
They're working, they're in the background, sometimes they're vilified, you know, how could they leave their kids, all this kind of stuff. But I feel like they just don't get a chance to explain their side of things. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to do community outreach and maybe find a collective, yeah, for these stories. I think they need to be brought out.
I think so too. And what a great platform to be on radio to be able to voice that. So why don't,
yeah,
I,
so people can find me there.
I was just gonna say, how can we connect with you?
Yes, I would love that. Maybe in a year I'll have a bunch of stories that I can put together, but I would love for any readers or people who are interested in this type of story to reach out to me through my website, which is just wileywaychunho.com, my full name.com, or through Instagram at ho, H-O, Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y, at ho Wiley. And you can DM me. Yes, I've received lovely messages about the book and about just stories, and I love hearing other people's stories and how they connect with mine, because ultimately I believe we're all connected by stories.
We sure are. I want to thank you so much for hanging out with me today, Wiley. I'm going to ensure that I include all ways to connect with you as well in the show notes, so that if people were like walking in the streets right now as they're listening to us and you weren't able to capture that, they can, you know, check that out online for sure. I so appreciate it. And like, again, congratulations for being, you know, involved in the 14th annual, especially coming from the volunteer aspect to being featured and a panelist. Thank you.
I'm sure I'll help with the chairs and stuff at the end. I'm used to that. Anyway, thank you so much, Nicole, for having me. This is wonderful.
Absolutely. Thank you again.
And that was my conversation with Wiley Wei Jun Ho. I am going to, as I've said several times, I'm going to include links to the show, to the Literasian Festival in the show notes, as well as ways to connect with Wiley. So you will, you know, be able to reach out if need be. And can you believe it? We are officially at the end of the show today. If you are a listener of Speak Up, tomorrow you're going to hear a piece about an exhibit showcasing Salish art at the Bill Reed Gallery called Every River Has a Mouth and more. And then next up is Democracy Now! I want to thank you so much for hanging out with me today, and I will be connecting with you again.
Hi, I'm